You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Each year, over 12 million people are arrested in the United States. Of those charged, nearly 95% will plead guilty for a reduced sentence. In many states, bail is set quite high, meaning that suspects can sit in jail for up to a year before they go to trial. And defending them are 15,000 public defenders nationwide, with caseloads in the hundreds, but paid a fraction of what their fellow law school graduates earn. Dawn Porter's new documentary, Gideon's Army, an inside look at the criminal justice system through the eyes of idealist young public defenders in the South, will be aired on HBO next Monday, July 1st. I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show, along with Travis Williams, one of the public defenders who is profiled in the film. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
Dawn, wasn't Clarence Earl Gideon's story the subject of a TV movie that starred Henry Fonda?
It was, Gideon's Trumpet, which is a very famous drama that, you know, Mr. Fonda made famous.
Well, what was the significance of the case, Gideon versus Wainwright?
Gideon versus Wainwright was decided 50 years ago, and it's actually one of the most important decisions in American legal jurisprudence. So it established the right to counsel for every criminal defendant facing jail time.
Travis, did you study that case when you were in law school?
I actually did. It's one of the cases that is pretty prominent, so you hear about it, you read about it, you study it.
Was it a factor in your decision to become a public defender?
Not necessarily, but because of that case, you know, states are required to fund us to some extent, so it at least brought that out.
Well, what did make you choose to become a public defender? There's certainly easier ways to make more money when you have a law degree.
For me, it boiled down to, you know, when I was growing up, just my interactions with the police, they weren't positive. It was, at least from my perspective, felt like I was being harassed. And so I knew I wanted to do a job that would, where I could right those wrongs or try to correct them or do my best to fight against them. And so it kind of morphed into becoming a public defender.
Now, Dawn, at the center of the story you tell is a group called the Southern Public Defender Training Center. Mm-hmm. What role does it play in the lives of the lawyers that you highlighted?
Southern Public Defender Training Center is really a spectacular program that is not replicated to anywhere, to my knowledge. It's now called Gideon's Promise, and they train and mentor young public defenders. So every year, they'll get hundreds of applications, and they can only take 30 to 40 public defenders who they will bring in for a two-week boot camp. But also what you'll see in the film is they are creating a community, a support group, because often public defenders, it's a very lonely job, and this group gives them mentors and people who believe the way they do about indigent defense.
And it also gives them an opportunity to vent.
It does, which, you know, we all need. And if you're doing this job, it's something that, you know, public defenders probably need more than most.
And venting, to some degree, Tavis, is because of the caseloads that public defenders have to carry. How big a caseload do you carry in your area? And would that be typical of public defenders around the country?
My caseload tends to be a little lower, usually around 100. And that's primarily because I usually handle level one felonies, very serious offenses, rape, aggravated child molestation, murder. So a good deal of my clientele are charged with those very serious offenses. So to kind of balance out the stress and the time those takes, my caseload is a little lower.
Well, we're still talking about 100 cases at any given time.
I think you see right there, Travis thinks 100 cases is a low caseload, and that's exactly the issue that's happening across the country.
And you concentrate here, Dawn, on the South, mm-hmm. So a number of Southern states, but could the film have been all that different if you had shot it in New York or Los Angeles or Chicago or any other major city?
I think I could have gone to any major metropolitan city and many rural areas and had the same experience. I might not have had these three wonderful public defenders, but in terms of the experience of public defenders, the same issues are happening across the country.
What percentage of people charged with a crime in the United States can afford a lawyer to defend them?
Well, about 80% percent of people whose cases are going to proceed through the criminal justice system are represented by public defenders. So if you think about that, what that means, you only get a public defender if you're indigent, if you're poor. So it's 80% of poor people. Those are the cases that are going forward.
And most of them can't post bail?
You know, the bail figures are, bail is set state by state. So in Georgia, where I film, for example, bails are excessively high. You'll get tens of thousands of dollars for a first offense. And if you're poor, you can't make that, and you can't even make a percentage of that. So you stay in jail.
So is that, Travis, a reason that there's an awful lot of pressure on the people you represent to plead guilty of a crime they may not have even committed?
Well, the pressure comes from so many different angles. I think the most, the heaviest weight comes from the risk involved. I'm generally not necessarily a risk-averse person, but from my perspective as counselor, I have to be. Because if you, whether or not you did it, in my mind, and this is for the good and for the bad, is irrelevant. My job is to assess the quality, quantity, and scrutinize the evidence and help you to reach a decision that provides the either the least amount of risk or the most the best outcome in a particular circumstance.
Well, you say in the film, every case has a redeeming quality. Not every person does. Not every case does. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, you know, as my perspective on an individual case, like you might have. I mean, you got to understand the circumstance in which somebody comes into contact with me. They're charged with an offense, many times a serious offense. They didn't pick me. I didn't pick them. So the relationship sometimes is not what you would want an attorney-client relationship to be. Sometimes it's not as positive or as good as you would want. Sometimes the case is, it just has factual qualities in it that, you know, may be depressing or sad. And so you have to find some motivation with each case, and you can find that in different ways. Sometimes I'm fighting because this person is just a great person or a sympathetic figure, or I just, you know, something about them and their personal story strikes me. But sometimes I'm fighting just because I want to fight the government. Sometimes I'm fighting because I think this particular statute or law is bogus or draconian. So every case, you know, where you might not find it in this particular person, you might find it in the charges, in the case, or in just some sort of, you know, rationale to fight the government.
Well, John, one of the people you profile with the very memorable name Brandy Alexander she had a client who was alleged to have put a hit out on her if she lost a case. That puts a lot of pressure.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a very unusual case, but I wanted to include that because that's her reality. And, you know, what Travis is pointing out is when you're a public defender, you get what you get. You don't get upset, right? If you are assigned a case, the person didn't choose you. You may not like each other. And yet you are tasked, if you're a public defender, with representing them and doing the best you can.
I want to pick up on that after we take a little break. My guests are Don Porter, who's the director of a film called Gideon's Army, an inside look at the criminal justice system through the eyes of idealist young public defenders in the South. It's from HBO Films and will be broadcast next Monday night. Also with us is Travis Williams, one of the public defenders who is profiled in this film. Stay with us for more. We are back with Don Porter, director of a film called Gideon's Army, an inside look at criminal justice system through the eyes of idealist young public defenders in the South. And also with us is Travis Williams. I don't know if we can still call him a young public defender, but he's not
old.
He's
only 30.
30 is old enough.
Well, the job makes you older, doesn't it? But Travis, let's say you have a client who's accused of committing a despicable act. How do you defend someone when you know he's guilty, he knows he's guilty, and it's your job to ensure that he's given a fair trial? Are you concerned ever that if you get that person acquitted, he'll just be free to commit more terrible crimes?
Well, you know, I think that's a perspective that, you know, some people may have, but when it comes down to it, generally the people who are guilty plead guilty. The people who it's in their best interest to plead guilty, they do.
But let's say the cops did an illegal search, mm-hmm. and that you're arguing that, and all, most of the evidence was collected during that illegal search, you might get that person off.
You know, obviously let Travis answer, but the question presumes that people are going to trial. 95% of cases don't go to trial. So in the 5% of cases that do, you know, the Constitution is not a technicality. We have rules for a reason. And so if the police did their job and they do it correctly, people should be prosecuted correctly.
And it goes to trial because the defendant decides that we're going to say he, there are women who you also defend, but mostly men, right?
Mostly for the most part.
And mostly African-American men?
Well, because I'm in a what some might consider a rural Georgia area, my clientele is really very proportionate to, you know, 50-50, 60-40, primarily poor white, poor black, poor Mexican. So it's not majority black, I would say.
So how is it determined whether a case will go to trial? You obviously talk with the client. Would a client insist, even though you think that it's a bad idea?
Well, as soon as when we're talking about whether or not to go to trial, I'm trying to look at the evidence from as close to an unbiased perspective as I can and tell them, hey, you know, trial is I don't know if I've ever necessarily, except in a few circumstances, been very, you know, trial is where you need to go. You need to go to trial. Because I'm also looking at the risk and the reward. And so when that decision is made, it's totally the client's decision.
Well, you have had a pretty successful record. You have a wall where you have stuck up all of your wins. But you also talk about having your losses tattooed on your back. How big a back do you have?
I got a normal back for a person that's 5'9". The names are small. And it's other things. It's other images there.
I think he's got eight on his back.
So you have eight names on your back right now?
Yeah, and a part of you know, a successful outcome is successful advice and some trust and strong rapport with your client, so that they make a decision that's in line with hopefully what their best decision should be is the decision that they make.
Now, Don, I mentioned Brandy Alexander. And you have a third person you profile here as well. Are there certain personality traits that are shared between these public defenders, the ones at least who last for a decade or more?
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, part of the reason that I was so fascinated, I'm a lawyer, but part of the reason I was not a criminal defense lawyer, and I think like a lot of people, I didn't really understand how anybody could do this job. How do you defend people who are accused of doing terrible things? And I think
With that caseload
and not being paid a lot. And also, you know, the public has a generally negative impression of public defenders. They don't think that they're excellent lawyers doing good work. So what was the attraction? And that was really kind of what motivated me to follow them. But I think that most good public defenders are, they have a healthy skepticism of authority. They don't, they're quite patriotic, actually. They actually have read the Constitution. They believe in it. They believe that you know, should not lock people up unless you have a fair trial. They're usually fighters, and they're usually quite empathetic.
And they get emotionally involved in these cases. Brandy had a client who's recommended for a pretrial diversion program, but his mother can't afford to post his bail.
You know, I think
and she really looks upset.
Oh, she was devastated. I mean, we all were. So, you know, in that case, there was a young man, and we had actually just come from visiting him at the jail. So I saw him. He's a 16-year-old kid. He was charged with burglary. He had already been in prison for 10 months. There was no evidence against him. But he couldn't afford bail. So he could either risk a trial, which would have been 10 years, or he could plead guilty. So he pled guilty to get out of jail because he didn't have a couple $1,000s.
On the other hand, she also, although she looked like she's always on the verge of quitting, she gets a not guilty verdict for her client, DeMontis Wright. And that seems to keep her going?
You know, I think in the case, one of the points I wanted to make with the documentary is, you know, if we get excellent lawyers who are well trained and they get a chance to do, you know, what their jobs are, often you see that there are gaping holes in cases that are brought. And that is, you know, I don't think our system is fairly balanced or working right now. If we're not putting the government to its proof, then we're not doing what the Constitution demands. We're not getting our fair day in court.
Travis, how long have you been a public defender?
5 years.
You're an effective defense attorney, as we point out. You win many of the cases that you try, at least that go to trial. Do you ever think about heading into the other side, especially since you have to put so many hours into your job, much of the disappointment of your girlfriend, who would like to spend more time with her?
Yeah, I'm sure that would provide more time for dating. But as far as the thought of going into the private sector, I think that this is probably, and you know, I don't know if this is said enough, this is a very fun job. You encounter interesting people, you hear interesting stories, you get to, you know, a big part of what I do is I go out and actually investigate cases and go out to alleged crime scenes, and, you know, I've been ran off with shotguns and people chasing me with dogs and coming out with knives. And so you get these great stories.
Good times.
That you'll never forget.
No stress involved.
I get a kick out of it. It's kind of fun, you know, taking what is very little information and turning that into a real viable defense.
So, Don, how much money does the average public defender make a year?
It's set state by state, so there's a big range, but it's about $30,000 to $35,000 to about $50,000. I don't know if Travis wants to share his exact salary, but let's say he's 5 years in and he's just now reaching that upper range.
And a number of the public defenders talked about reaching the end of the month and not knowing how they're going to pay their bills, how they're going to pay for food.
You know, it's a huge problem. I mean, Travis talks about having money for extra bills like gas and food. I don't know how many people consider that extra, but a big, huge crisis is student loan. So many of them have more than six figures, you know, $125,000, $135,000 in student loans.
Are you paying off a student loan, Travis?
Yes, sir. Actually, the Georgia Student Finance Commission is helping me pay off my student loans, and I pay what I'm able to negotiate, the lowest amount I'm able to negotiate with them. So that's what I try to pay. I can't afford to pay it off. It's a lot of debt, but, you know, everybody's got expenses.
The third public defender that you profiled, June Hardwick, has left the profession.
She did. You know, she left the public defender office and she set up her own office. So she's actually still doing indigent defense work. She's just not doing it as part of the office. And part of that reason is she's a single mother and she could not afford to provide for her and her son on her salary.
Do you know what the burnout rate is for public defenders?
You know, I think it's pretty high. You know, I don't have an exact figure, but it's pretty high, and understandably so when you see what the workload is and relative to the pay.
Travis, the case of Brandon Mullen seemed to particularly engage you. How much of yourself did you see in Brandon?
I saw a lot. You know, he's a he's a young kid with really a lot of potential, real nice looking kid, and things just. The system, and you can plug in any system, foster care, the government generally failed him and left him in a position where he had to fend for himself. And unfortunately, as a young person, you know, you're not going to always make the best decisions of who to hang around or where to find yourself associated with or who to find yourself associated with. And so I felt real sorry for him because I've made decisions about who to hang around. It wasn't always the best decision, or found myself in very, very dangerous situations. And, you know, but for the grace of God, you know, Brandon Mullen is where he is and I'm where I'm at. So it was definitely a situation I could directly relate to.
Well, the audience will, most of people in the audience will side with you when you argue for him getting 2 years in medium security. But the judge who says sympathizes, gave him 5 years in a maximum security facility.
Mm-hmm. You know, Brandon was facing a 10-year minimum mandatory sentence. So that's in Georgia, no matter what the amount. He was alleged to have stolen $96. In Georgia, you can get life in prison for stealing $96. So I think the judge thought, and I have a lot of respect for Judge Deal, that giving him 5 years instead of 10 to life was a good deal.
Well, 5 years in maximum security for $96 does seem a bit harsh. Do you keep in touch with the people who've been sent to jail?
I keep in touch with a number of them. I keep a running list of guys that just stuck out in my mind or for some reason just, I guess, maybe touched me in a different kind of way than necessarily the average case. And I'll communicate with the parole board on their behalf, write letters. It used to be a situation in Georgia where you could go visit a parole board. It was easier access. They've kind of cut off that easy access. But I would go regularly, at least twice a year, to advocate on behalf of certain individuals.
Now, Don, when the case was decided, the Clarence Earl Gideon case, Gideon versus Wainwright, by the Supreme Court, people assume that this would mean that any indigent person would get good legal counsel.
Mm-hmm.
Have the states worked really hard to give as little as possible?
You know, I don't know if they've intentionally worked to give as little as possible. I mean, the Gideon decision said you have to have representation. It didn't say how that happened. So 48 states decided to establish public defender offices. And those offices vary in the skill of the lawyers and also in the resources.
And so the other two states just appoint lawyers?
The other two states have a system of appointed counsel, although I think Alabama now is going to have a public defender system. So now in 2013, Alabama is going to join the other 48 states and have a public defender system.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Don Porter is the director of a film called Gideon's Army, an inside look at the criminal justice system through the eyes of idealist young public defenders of the South. It will be broadcast on HBO next Monday night. That's July 1st. Also with us is Travis Williams, who plays a major role in this film. Travis, I hope everything is working out okay with you and your girlfriend.
It actually didn't work out, but I guess I could kind of see that coming.
I think people watching the film saw it coming, too. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.